You are listening to Bikescape, episode number 30, and it's October 6, 2005.
For room 104, the name's Herman, P.W. Herman.
Know nothing right now, Mr. Herman.
Well, welcome to Bikescape. Let's turn this thing down. Turn yourself down, Mr. Bungle. Mr. Bungle playing the Pee Wee Herman theme there. Welcome to Bikescape. Where are all the new listeners coming from? I don't know where you guys are. What's going on here? But things are moving along in Bikescape land. We did a podcast a while back with Bike Dave, bike mechanic extraordinaire at American Cyclery. He gave us lots of opinions and thoughts about maintaining your bike and whatnot. A few years ago, we had some people came out to San Francisco back in 99 for San Francisco Bike Summer. And there was this guy that came, his name was Dave also, and he called himself Mr. Bike. And he looked just like Bike Dave in many ways. I mean, he was definitely an individual, but we thought, wow, maybe every city has a Bike Dave. And we decided that this must be the Chicago Bike Dave. But I hope that doesn't bother you, Mr. Bike. This is Dave Gloatz. We did an interview with him. I did an interview with him a couple weeks ago now, and it's ready to be podcast. So Dave wrote this book called Urban Bikers Tips and Tricks, and it's a wonderful book. The San Francisco Bicycle Coalition gives it out to new members whenever a new member signs up. And I'll turn this music down just a little bit more even. And it basically tells you how to buy a bike, how to maintain your bike, how to ride it in traffic in an urban situation. It seems to me to be aimed mostly at people who use it as everyday transportation, although Dave disputes that, but it's been used that way here in San Francisco. It's being given out by the Bike Coalition, and it's just a great book. And I got an interview with him, and here it is. Okay, we're talking to Dave Gloatz, author of Urban Bikers Tips and Tricks, among other books. And I wanted to ask you, why did you write a book about urban biking?
I thought that there were still are an awful lot of people who don't bicycle because they don't think they can do it. And I find that in this country, there isn't basic information readily available that I think would get people bicycling more. And not only is the information hard to find, but when it is hard to find, it's not very friendly. I have lots of bike shops I know about that are good places to go to for advice and encouragement, but I also know of lots of bike shops where they're rather intimidating places for people to go if you're not an enthusiast. So being it as there aren't a lot of, and also the books that you can buy on bicycling tend to be aimed toward people who want to learn to fix stuff in depth or want to take tours in specific places, but they're not geared towards the person who just wants to know how to, I'm worried about my bike being stolen. How am I going to, make sure, do I got to buy one of these $60 locks? You know what? People have basic questions like that. I found through years and years of teaching bicycling and being involved in bike education what those basic questions are. And I thought, well, if I could put them in one place and make it real fun for them to look at, then I might be doing prospective bikers and existing bikers a real service.
Yeah, it seems like the subtext of the book is that the bicycle is a tool for everyday transportation. It's not really a sportsman's tool, the way you're treating it. It's more about getting to work, going to the store. Would that be accurate?
Well, I don't think I say when I talk about why one should ride one's bike, what you should use it for. even though I do have tactics in there for how to deal with a commute, they're useful for if you're not going just to work, but if you're going to a friend's house or you're going to church, whatever your destination is. I'm kind of agnostic about the destination, I think, in the book. But certainly the stuff that the tips provided are very useful to someone who's going to work, especially since one of the big concerns for people biking to work is hygiene. And so I took a lot of care to cover that issue, because I think it's true whether, as I say, you're going to work or you're going to a place where you just want to look nice and not smell bad when you get there.
And you write a lot about traffic techniques, getting through traffic, getting comfortable with traffic, how to look around, using your body language. I noticed you're a little unorthodox. You got some pictures. It's really nice. You have diagrams and pictures, and it's describing in prose how to get through traffic is really difficult, and the diagrams are great in here. I noticed you have this little icon of a sly biker, little guy with a helmet pointing at his head, you know, like I know what I'm doing. And let's just talk about red lights, for instance. How do you say I get to a red light and it's maybe 6 a.m. There's nobody out. I can hear nobody. I see nobody. And I just feel like running through the red light. What would you? How do you respond to that? How do you respond to that in the book here too?
I was out. I was in Baltimore this past weekend bicycling with a friend of mine who doesn't have lots of experience bicycling in urban traffic. And we came to a red light, and it was just like you described, John. There was nobody around. I mean, literally nobody around. There were no cars. There were no people walking. No other bike riders. I said, "Let's go." And she said, "Well, don't you preach, obeying traffic laws?" And I say, "Well, I also want to capitalize on the efficiency of the bicycle, and one of the things that allows you to do this is something called the conservation of momentum. It's easier, in a bike, it's harder on a bike to get going after you've stopped. You know, you don't press the gas pedal, you gotta, press the pedal." And so I have sort of a hierarchy of concerns. One of my first concerns is safety. So I don't want to, the reason I don't want to break traffic laws is because I found a long time ago when I stopped running red lights that I stopped having close calls with cars at intersections. Mm-hmm. And then further along my hierarchy is I want to demonstrate to all the other road users that bicycle riders can behave like motor vehicle drivers with respect to the law. And, we play by the same rules, so we should be treated the same. And then further along my hierarchy is a sort of conservation momentum, and I want to get where I'm going and take advantage of my inherent efficiency of the bicycle. And if there's nobody around, then my first two concerns really don't hold valid for me. I'm not compromising my safety, and there's nobody to demonstrate to. There's no witnesses, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I'll go.
Yeah, maybe you could also describe the impatient left turn.
Impatient left turn. Let me preface it by saying that, I just didn't dream all this stuff up, right? When I wrote this book, I spent a year, literally, going from North American city to city, places like your town, San Francisco, Oakland, Vancouver, Toronto, Washington, D.C., Minneapolis, you name it, big cities. And I rode around with bicycle riders. I found people who bicycled. Use networking. And when I went around them, I said, "What do you know that you think makes you smart or makes you a clever or efficient or effective bicycle rider?" And those tips are what I put in my book. So the impatient left turn is one of those. That's where if you're coming to a left turn, a situation where there is a left turn lane, and there are cars backed up in the left turn lane, and you don't want to get behind them all, one of the things that you could do is get yourself to the right of those cars. You don't want to put yourself in a position where you're going to get doored, so you got to sneak up along cars that are stopped at the intersection, both in the straight through lane and the left turn lane, very carefully. And then This works particularly well if there is a left turn arrow. Often, cars in intersections with a left turn arrow is triggered by a car sitting in the left turn lane. There's a detector there, detects the car.
That's right.
And as you're coming to the intersection, you can spot. You can watch the light of the cross street. It's green when you're coming to the intersection, and then it begins to turn yellow. You know you've got about 4 seconds. You can hit that intersection and proceed around the turn just as the light turns green. But sneaking through and getting ahead of all the cars.
Yeah. So basically, what you're doing is you're articulating what bicyclists do every day and trying to figure out a safe way to do it. You know, the reality of bicycling, is that would be accurate.
Yeah, a safe way, but also, as I said before, the way that capitalizes on the inherent maneuverability and efficiency of the bicycle. And you've got, because you're on a bike, you can see around you a lot more easily than if you were surrounded by, 2 tons of metal and glass. And so you've got a lot, you should use that ability to see to your advantage.
Yeah, there are a lot of different, there's other differences also between bicycles and cars. I mean, they're both vehicles on the street legally and in fact, but... there's that, and what else? There's you're only 18 inches wide for one thing.
Quite often.
Yeah. So, you also write a lot about trouble situations, like when a motorist hits you. What would be how do you say you're okay, but maybe a little damage to your bike, or maybe your elbow's a little bruised. What would be the thing you should do if you get hit by a car?
You know, there are a lot of considerations. That's why in my book I've got sort of a step-by-step. And, if you're hit by a car, you're usually pretty shaken up, and you don't have a lot of time. you often can't think of everything you're supposed to do. So I break it down to 3 things. One is, first of all, you should make sure you're all right. And, you know, just kind of check yourself. Can you get up? Can you move all your body parts? That's the most important thing. If you're not, then you probably shouldn't be moving around. You should probably call out for help. So the second thing is get help if you need it. Say, I'm hurt, call an ambulance, call the police, call 911, and get yourself taken care of. If that happens, you also want to think about what's going to happen to your bike. Some people lose their bikes when they're taken away by the police or an ambulance. And... sometimes because they don't think about it, so somebody rips it off. Sometimes the police put it somewhere and they can't find it. Sometimes it goes in the ambulance and it doesn't come out of the ambulance. Just weird stuff. So it's taking care of yourself is primary, but secondary, if you have the wherewithal to get someone to lock your bike up for you. And that's one of the important reasons to carry, if I could make a tangential remark here. That's why I think it's always important to carry a lock. Not necessarily, it is necessary, I think, to lock at your destination, but even if you don't plan on locking at your destination, you're taking your bike inside somewhere, if you got hit, God forbid, then in that kind of situation I'm describing, you could get your bike locked up so it's there when you're, done with it getting taken care of. And most people don't want to think of themselves as a victim, so if they're not planning on carrying a lock, they're not going to carry it for that reason. But, it's a reality. It happens, and you can't always predict it. And then the third thing is, if you have the wherewithal, is try to get information. If you're still laying on the ground and, you don't think you should get up, you could also call it. Did anybody see what happened? Could you write your phone number down for me?
Mm-hmm.
So then later, if it comes down to getting some money for the loss of your bike or for medical costs, then at least you've got, some witnesses that you might be able to rely on.
Yeah, I'd also add that make sure a cop arrives on the scene and get a police report. Very often I've noticed that when there's, I've come across this many times where in San Francisco, police will not file a police report unless you ask them to, especially if there's no apparent injury. And it's very important to get a police report and to get a copy of it for yourself as well for insurance purposes.
If I can expand on that, in Chicago, and many other places, police are required to make a report out if there's a crash with a bicycle, whether it's bike-to-bike, car-bike. And if you request it from a police officer and they refuse because it's too much paperwork, you can always go to a police station and insist. You don't have to speak to a supervisor, and that sort of thing.
So Is there anything else? How about rainy weather? You have a chapter on night and bad weather. What's your philosophy on writing at nighttime? I mean, I'm sorry, writing in rainy weather. You get a lot of that in Chicago, don't you?
Yeah, we do. And it's kind of like when people first, you know, I always try to remember my audience, and my audience is the average person who may or may not ride a bike. You know, does ride a bike, may not ride it very often. And, you know, riding in rain is the last thing they want to think about. Maybe riding in snow is the very last thing they want to think about, but rain is right there next to it. First, if you're that kind of person, you don't want to ride in the rain. Well, one of the things you can do before you're going to go out on your bike is check the weather, you know. You can go online to weather.gov, or you can look at the newspaper, you can turn on the TV, whatever, you get a weather radio, which is what I have, and I listen to it every morning. And my rule of thumb used to be, when I didn't bicycle in the rain long ago, is that if the probability of rain was 30% or greater, I wouldn't bike. So, you know, pretty much, you know, that's where I drew the line, and then mostly kept me out of the rain, you know. So that's the first thing. Second thing is that if you decide you are going to bicycle in the rain, you got to decide, do I want to get wet or not? And if you decide you want to get wet, like it's 95 degrees Fahrenheit outside, and getting wet would seem a very pleasant thing, then just go for it, you know. If you don't, then you want to make sure that you've got not only the clothing, but the equipment that will keep you dry. My book goes into pretty exhaustive detail about what the different tactics you can use are for staying dry. And I don't know if you want me to go into all those now, but there are things you can do to stay dry.
Okay. Yeah, I recommend Gore-Tex socks. Those are it's a miracle invention.
Is Gore-Tex a sponsor of your program?
No, it isn't. We don't have any sponsors.
Okay.
But let's see. Oh,
it should be. You're mentioning it. You ought to get something out of them now.
Yeah, you know, Bikescape makes. I haven't figured out a way to make money off of this thing.
You got to give you product.
We do it out of love. It's all done out of bike love. I wanted to also ask you about bike lanes. I assume, since you also work for the Chicago Bicycle Federation, that you are in favor of bike lanes and facilities for bicycles. Do you have any reasoning, philosophy behind that? Or do you actually like bike lanes,
I do like bike lanes. They have been shown in places all across the U.S. and elsewhere to encourage bicycle trips. Bicycle trips have been shown, and we've got studies in Chicago that show this, that before and after a bike lane goes in a street beforehand, or after bike lanes go in, the number of bike trips on that street increase. And we have counts on surrounding streets that show that they're not just coming off of other streets, and that's why they're going on this street. People seem to be bicycling more because they feel protected.
Oh, the numbers actually go up, huh?
Yeah. Having said that, I do want everyone to realize that because whether or not a street has a bike lane, there are things you can do to make yourself safe on just about any urban street. And therefore make it more rideable than you might think. One thing that bicycle educators always like to say to the squeamish is that it's not as dangerous as it looks from the sidewalk, most streets, that is. There are certain suburban places where you get into higher speed roads, 40-plus miles per hour. Those can be a little trickier for the average person. But, you know, on an average city street, 30 miles an hour speed limit, even though some people are going faster than that, you can do what you need to keep yourself safe, and you don't need a bike lane to do it. You keep away from the curb, where motorists can't see you. You stay out of the 3 or 4 feet next to parked car, what I call the door zone, mm-hmm. and you stay actually closer to traffic, and where motorists can see you, and you're going to be safer. In a bike lane, one of the problems that bike lanes has, and we see this in Chicago because we have about 100 miles of them here, is that quite often cities install bike lanes right next to parked cars. And in Chicago, we have a 5-foot standard width bike lane, so it's 5 feet next to the parked cars, about 2/3 of which is in the door zone.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's kind of a setup. You know, you're riding in the bike lane in the door zone thinking, well, I'm protected here in this bike lane, and wacko, you know, somebody opens the door. So you can't blithely ride in bike lanes thinking that, you know, now you've got, you know, this, you know, deflector shield around you. You've got to know some things. And one thing to know is next to parked cars, you got to ride on the left side of the bike lane out of the door zone. And in many places, at the intersections, bike lanes disappear. They stop because then, you know, it indicates that motorists are going to be making right turns and getting into the right lane. So another thing that you can do at the end of a bike lane is hold your line. If you're going straight to an intersection, you don't move over to the curb. You stay in a place where if a motorist is going to turn right, they're not going to turn right in front of you. They have to, you know, slow down, stop, because most motorists are not going to consciously hit you. You know, they're just not. We don't have, contrary to what some bikers might think, the majority of psycho motorists out there.
Yeah, it's just those, it's the few psychos that kind of stand out, don't they? Yeah, so I wanted to ask you also about Chicago. What's going on in Chicago these days? You have any big events coming up in the near future?
Well, we're getting ready for what we call Bike Winter. You know, back in 99, you folks in San Francisco started Bike Summer.
Uh-huh.
And we had a large Chicago contingent out there. And we came back from Bike Summer kind of jazzed up, and some of our friends here, my fellow bikers who were not at Bike Summer, said, well, that sounds like a really cool thing, and they want us to have Bike Summer next year. That's cool. Well, why don't we do Bike Winter? You know, why focus just on summer cycling? You know, because there's lots of fun to be had biking out in the winter, you know, and a lot of us do it. So ever since the inspiration of Bike Summer in San Francisco in 99, we've had Chicago Bike Winter. And so they're getting excited again about Bike Winter. And we have a couple winter bicycling classes that I will be teaching. One on the far south, near south suburbs in Blue Island on October 25th, and one on the north side of Chicago on November, first Saturday in November, whatever that is, the 5th. And those will sort of kick off the bicycling season, bike winter season for us. And there's all sorts of cool bike winter events. You can go to, if you want to see some of the information about those classes, you can go to my website, mrbike.com/appearances. And if you want to see more about bike winter events, you can go to bikewinter.org.
Okay, yeah, we'll put links on the blog at bikescape.blogspot.com.
Yeah. And there's, you know, the Santa Cycle Rampage, which takes place all over the world. People dress up as Santa and go cavort in shopping areas, and sort of some Santas just do it to make merry, and some Santas do it to bring non-consumption messages to shoppers at Christmas time. And so we have a proud tradition of a Santa Cycle Rampage every last weekend before Christmas every year.
Well, that sounds like
we had like, I think we had like 30 or 40 bikes, elves. I'm sorry, Santas, elves, and reindeer last December.
Yeah, I heard you had a dreidel there once too.
We have dreidels. You know, we want to make sure that we're multi-denominational.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and I'll let you know when this goes up on the web.
Well, thanks a lot, John. And I'm sorry again for the time problem. I hope it didn't throw you off too much.
Oh, no problem. It worked out okay.
Sometimes I don't know what I'm doing, 'cause sometimes all my days are filled with rain. As I travel down life's highway, things ain't going my way, 'cause there's always someone swerving in my lane. You keep us swerving causing lots of danger. I'm a honking on my horn, I'm a shooting you the finger. I keep a switching on my bright lights, but you're just too dim to know when you're swerving on life's highway. You're running someone off the road. The day you draw.
Well, that was an interesting interview. Let's see. Let's look at the news, shall we? Yes, why not? Police crackdown in London. London CM, critical mass, has been... get an email from Amegiac. mass at amegiac.dyndns.org. Says, hi, it seems London Critical Mass is set to follow New York into the CM history books. On the last ride, we were given letters by police officers telling us that our demonstration, in quotes, was illegal, and the way they were, and that they were reviewing their policing of the event. The letter can be found at I'll put a link on the blog, bikescape.blogspot.com. So they've been spreading the word, and I'm spreading the word too. So keep your eyes open on it. They have an email list at list.riseup.net/www/arc/cm-london. So they say that Jenny Jones and Darren Johnson of the London Green Party have already pledged their support and have written to the Met Police Commissioner. They've also said they'll join us for the next ride. And they're trying to get as many members of Parliament and publications involved as much as possible. So then if you're in London, the next Critical Mass will occur Friday the 28th of October, 6 p.m. at London's Waterloo South Bank. The ride generally leaves about 6:30. So go and support Critical Mass in London. I'm gonna have a podcast on New York Critical Mass. Give everybody an update next week. I'm working on getting a couple more interviews before we do it. They just had another Critical Mass on the 30th, and it was pretty nasty. Again, more arrests. People keep showing up, though. If you're in San Francisco, you may want to go check out the film Still We Ride. We showed it after Critical Mass on last week on Friday after Critical Mass, and good turnout. I hope a lot of people turn out to see it at the film festival on Friday night at the Victoria Theater here in San Francisco. The Bicycle Film Festival, it's going on. There's two more nights, tonight and tomorrow night. You may have missed it by the time you hear this, but if you haven't, get out and go see it. Go support the film festival. Let's turn this darn music down a bit more. I always play the music too loud. What else? So there's that. Yes, the Bicycle Film Festival is also happening in Tokyo, and I know we have at least one listener in Japan. Sends me some nice emails. You know, if you send me emails and I don't get back to you, I really am sorry. I get a lot of emails these days, and I really appreciate every single one of them, and they all get read. And when I can, I write back to them, but I don't always. I'm sorry if I don't. But I get some great emails from someone out in Tokyo, or in Japan anyway, somewhere in Japan. So if you're in Tokyo, go check out the film festival November 19th and 20th. Check out bicyclefilmfest.com for more information. Let's see. Here in the Bay Area, well, in California, the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, just vetoed two bicycle bills that we've been working really hard on trying to get passed. They were both passed overwhelmingly in the assembly. Assembly Bill 748 would have made it would have prohibited any kind of tolls for cyclists and pedestrians on bridges and highways around the state, including the Golden Gate Bridge, where talk of tolls has come up every now and then. So, you know, the prices of gas have gone up. You know, we're coming up on peak oil. The emergency is beginning. Increased obesity, you know, more environmental concerns related to motor vehicles, and he basically wants to discourage rather than encourage healthy, sustainable transportation like bicycling and walking. So that's our governor, the governator. So he's going to, when the peak oil comes, he'll just beat it down. He'll just terminate it. That's how he'll deal with it. But he won't be governor anymore by then, hopefully. But we've worked hard on the bill, and he killed it. But it isn't over. The campaign's not over. It just means that we won't be able to make it illegal to put tolls on the bridge. But we can still prevent tolls on individual bridges and roadways. So the Golden Gate Bridge toll, the Bike Coalition is asking people to send a letter to the Golden Gate Bridge District. Let me just make a note to put that sfbike.org/GGB on the website. Pass out some flyers. You can send an email to Leah at sfbike.org, and You can arrange to pass out some flyers out on Market Street. Also, he vetoed the AB 523, the state bicycle transportation account, which would have set up state bike funding at its current level of $7.2 million a year. So now, because of the veto, the funding is going to decrease to $5 million a year, which is just such a tiny amount compared to the rest of the transportation budget. But okay. Got to keep working. The battle's never over. What else? New York. I told you about critical mass. We'll get into that next month, next week in the next podcast. But the Central Park Moonlight Ride, that's a happy ride. Friday, October 7th, 10 p.m., Columbus Circle entrance to Central Park. Join us for a relaxing auto-free ride through Central Park. Enjoy the tranquility of the ride, of the park, and its beautiful ponds and waterways. Totally safe ride with front and rear bike guides, a nature lover's dream in Manhattan. Folds Up. You've heard of Time's Up has this thing called Folds Up, the folding bike ride. Saturday, October 8th at 2 p.m. West 23rd Street on the Hudson River Greenway in Manhattan. 10-mile ride, leisurely 10-mile ride through Manhattan and Brooklyn, showcasing folding bicycles. All types of bikes are welcome, but people need to be interested in folding bikes at least. And then also on Saturday the 8th at 4 p.m. In Stuyvesant Cove Park, East 23rd at the East River, Folds Up will have a folding bike festival. So those are really great in New York. You see a lot more folding bikes in New York than you do here in San Francisco because I guess it's just a better place. You can put them on the commuter trains and whatnot. Also in New York, there's a movie night Thursday, October 13th, The Return of the Scorcher and We Are Traffic. These are two movies that were made by Ted White, great bicycle filmmaker, and Return of the Scorcher was his first film about bicycles, and it was just a wonderful movie about the return of scorching. Scorching is what they used to call cyclists at the turn of the last century because they went so ungodly fast compared to horses and walking. So there's that, and then We Are Traffic, of course, that's about critical mass. Return of the Scorcher, just a little point of trivia, is where the word critical mass came from. When you describe our monthly bike rides, there's a scene in there where you're looking down on a bunch of traffic in an intersection in China. Cars are coming across, and the bicycles are at the intersection, and one of them just sort of pokes out into the traffic, waits for a break, and then the rest of them kind of follow. And they attain critical mass and take over the intersection. And the narrator calls it a critical mass, and it stuck with us. Much better than the old name for critical mass used to be called the commute clot. That's it. Also, on KALW Radio in San Francisco, there's a program called KALW News, and it's a once-a-week news show. It's very good. They usually do one subject per week, and this week they talked about car-free transportation. And there's a good article, there's a good segment there about how having a senior moment here. There's a good segment about AC Transit, the bus system here in the East Bay of the Bay Area, how they don't get any money, whereas BART, which serves the suburbs, gets lots of money, and they make the case that it's a racial discrimination case, and there's a lawsuit going on, and that's interesting. And then the second segment, of course, is about critical mass, and they interview three people, one of whom you might know. It's a pretty good piece. I recommend it. And there's another piece about a woman who puts a message on her answering machine, telling people different places to go, little mundane places to go where you can share experiences with her. So check that out, KALW.org. Links are on the website. And, well, I believe that's about it. Let's say goodbye, and I'll see you next week, 7 to 10 days from now, with another Bikescape. Bye, everybody.
You think you have gone a little too far in the Red, blue, green, yellow, and steel. Passing you at the speed into the sunset, red and